you may know that I also own an 8405 that's not in great shape. And so to mix and match the parts would have been handy. Oh well. And whether I give mine to you or you give yours to me, I guess we should have considered that. It's too bad I didn't know what was going on. I have used an 8405 in the past. When they work well, it's an awful nice machine. The bad news is it only goes up to 1,000 megs, but it still can make some very nice measurements. In its day, which it came considerably before Vector Network Analyzer, in its day, it was a pretty good thing. Over to you, John, KQLIW. Yeah, I guess I never mentioned the fact that I've got one, because mine is in pretty rough condition. It needs service, and I haven't supplied that energy to it yet. Got bigger projects, but bigger fish to fry. Okay, I think both Jim got a lot of information, Bill got a lot of information, so I'd like to believe we justified our existence tonight. 73, John, be kind to each other. See you down the log, K2LIW. Back to you, John.
AC2IS.
Yeah, I hear you, but go ahead. AC2IS, K2LIW.
Here, just wanted to mention that I did kick out an email, so you should have info in your mailbox regarding the walk-on radio.
Very good. I thank you for that information. So you've solved the walk-on problem. And so with the Baofeng and walk-on, with people being able to learn the skill, it's a little bit crazy, so if they can program it from the front panel, that I think is the way that half the population wants to go. Not everybody wants to do it by computer. Over to you, Bill.
Yeah, I don't know if you'll be able to open the spreadsheet. It's in OpenOffice. Probably you have OpenOffice, but if not, I could possibly export it to Excel or something like that. And I don't know how easy it'll be to follow the my written quote-unquote lecture notes there, but if you have any questions, let me know.
I'm guessing that if I had trouble opening it with our Linux system, the next step would be, is it possible to export it in Adobe?
As far as I know, exporting a spreadsheet to Adobe format would not be very useful. The spreadsheet allows you to enter information for a bunch of different channels, then allows you to select a channel, and then gives you sort of step-by-step, these are the buttons you have to push to program that channel. And an Adobe document would not be dynamic like that.
Understand. So I'll, if I'm unable to open it, I'll forward a copy to Chris and see if he can figure out what's the right way to go. What about you, Bill?
Right, since you're running a Linux system, I'm assuming that you're already running OpenOffice, and if not, that's something Chris should be able to install on a Linux system, and that should work well.
I know I have the equivalent of OpenOffice. I don't know if it's got that name. Go ahead, Joe. Yes, Joe, I got that email, and I'm studying it as is. I guess you had about 30 entries there. Looks like you've done quite a bit of research on that one. Go ahead. Understand. I just made a rough estimate, 30. Maybe it's not that many, but there's quite a few of them there that I didn't know that existed. Yeah, I think I was describing the way the Large Hadron Collider works. They make 2,800 bundles of protons. Each bundle has got, I forget the exact number, I think it's 10 to the 25 power protons. And if you could really see these bundles, they look exactly like a piece of very thin spaghetti. So roughly a foot long and something in the vicinity of a 32nd of an inch in diameter. That's what each bundle is in the machine. So you've got 2,800 bundles going clockwise, 2,800 bundles going counterclockwise, and in four positions around the machine, you let those clockwise and counterclockwise guys hit head-on. And with the best possible focusing you've got, common sense would lead you to believe they hit once and it's all over in a second. Well, because of the real spaces that are between these tiny particles called protons, even though you focus them as best you can, that machine runs for 24 hours on one load. And even then, only a certain percentage of the protons get used up, if you know what I mean. Over to you, Joe, KQLIW.
Okay, you said photons, not protons.
Yeah, we're talking about protons with a P, PAPA. Go ahead. What was that again about Florida and colliding with each other? Renabite? Okay, and now I understand. Yeah, by way of that Zimmerman case, and now there's, what, six people that just got shot? Florida's a pretty hot spot. In more ways than one. Okay. It's late enough for me. I'm going to have to go away. Bye-bye, you all. See you next week. KQLIW.
Visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Budget, so he got out of college
with his bank account intact and no loans. And then when he was ready to go to graduate school, I got in right under the deadline, and I was able to get him tuition remission, so the only thing it cost us was the equivalent of income tax on what the tuition would have been. Okay, that's pretty cool. And that's all that his education cost him, was the equivalent of that income tax. Then I guess he's a pretty lucky guy. Oh, yeah. And the young one, he's currently in paramedic school, and he's got a deal that, assuming he completes the course with a B or better, and from what he was told, you either get a B or better or you don't pass, he will get tuition reimbursement from the hospital with one proviso. He stays an employee of the hospital system for 3 years post-graduation. Well, if they're going to reimburse him, that's only right that they get him, you know, a commitment of servitude. Yeah, I don't mind the indentured servant bit. And especially when you come down to it, if you can get a job in their EMS system, it's one of the highest paying in the area. There you have it. So my kids, as far as education, have nothing to gripe about. Elliot planning to go back to school after the Army, or is the Army his career now? Oh, no, but they will pay for school if he decides to do that. He's there for another 4 years anyway, so we'll figure that out as it goes. Enlistment is a 5-year commitment. I never looked into it. But he signed up for 5. The enlistment was for 4. He got a bonus for adding an extra one on. Oh, he got a signing bonus? If you want to call it that. Did they also guarantee his area specialty? That's all in the contract. That, you know, your MOS, your job, is a guarantee. They will train you in it, and that will be your job. They won't switch you. Although you do have the option to switch yourself if you want, but they will not switch you. And what happens if after you're in the service and you get through basic and you start going to the training for your MOS-specific training, you find out, or they find out, that you're not suited for that kind of work? First off, your job pick is based on your aptitude skills testing. So they test you and then they know what jobs you're suited for. And if you want to change, then I guess you have the option to change. You can't go for something that requires a higher aptitude skill level, but I'm sure you can probably change for something that requires an equal or lesser aptitude skill level. Okay, so they've already determined that you're going to be able to do the job you want before they say, okay, we'll let you do that job. Kinda. I mean, you take these tests, and then based on your scoring on these tests, then they open certain jobs up to you based on the tests. So I guess the guys who just barely can read on an elementary school level don't get the high-tech jobs offered to them. Try. They carry a gun, and they work in the infantry. or the motor pool, or constant KP. There are people who need it to clean the pot, even with it, it's not a punishment. There are plenty of people, and there are plenty of jobs. So, other than the fact you're tired from driving, how you doing? Plus, we had a wedding yesterday. We had a wedding that started at 5:30 up in Great Neck. We didn't get our entree served until almost 11 o'clock. They were still going, you know, balls to the wall at 11:30 when we turned around and we just had to get out. You know, Sunday night weddings are tricky no matter what. I remember mine was a Sunday, but I think I had the equivalent of what was called a twi night. Didn't start that late. Whatever. And 2PP and Mobile, by the way. It started, it was up at the Temple Israel in Great Neck, and oh my God, it was just, you know, it was too much for a Sunday night, man. We had a bail. I had to come home, I had to, you know, get all ready for bed, get ready for work in the morning and all the other nonsense, and it was like, just too late, too much compressed into this whole last 4 days. I'm trying to figure this out. If the wedding was called for 5:30, even if they go ceremony first, that means the ceremony is going to start at 6. Ceremony takes approximately a half an hour, so that's 6:30 for cocktail hour. 7:30, they're going into the main room. It took them 3 hours before they got to the entree? Parties are usually 4 hours long. Oh. They had the cocktail hour first, then the ceremony, which was long and protracted, then we went back into the reception. Okay, cocktail hour is usually an hour, hour and a half at max. So you're talking 5:30, that brings you up to 7 o'clock. 45 minutes for the ceremony brings you 7:45. By the time you get into room, 8 o'clock, 2 hours, main course at 11. They stretch things. Except that the cocktail hour was like more like 2.5 hours. As I said, they stretch things. Tons of food and drink and, oh, I'm hurting. Plus, we didn't get back home from the whole tour till 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon. So we had enough time to just possibly, you know, put our heads down on a pillow for about 2-3 hours. Sounds like a busy weekend, and I don't think that the prospect of doing overtime today would be very amenable to you. I don't know. I'll have to see how much my partner carries me this morning. Yeah, well, Saturday, and it turned out to be a gorgeous day on Saturday. I had the annual party that includes the watermelon, the original. And then yesterday, the weather was so iffy, my wife decided, we're not going to go to the beach. So guess who loaded the rest of the cabinets yesterday? The kitchen is fully functional, and everything's back where it belongs, except the stuff that belongs on the countertops, because we don't have the real countertops yet. Are those getting delivered and installed? From what I understand, the manufacturer of the countertops is receiving the raw material early part of this week. The countertops will be cut, the sink installed in it, and there is an appointment a week from this coming Wednesday for the countertops to be installed. And depending on how early in the morning he gets there, the backsplashes get started that same day. And then the finish electrical, and then we're done on the stuff that's on the inside. He's got two minor jobs to do on the outside, which shouldn't take him much more than one day. Excellent, Smithers. Yeah, well, I've got the punch list of touch-ups that I already went over with him. He said nothing on the list was a problem. None of my electrical boxes are fully secured right now because they were suspended in the old backsplash. So now they're just floating around until he redoes everything with the tile and resets those. So I'm not using the outlets on the counters at all. I don't really like plugging into outlets that have boxes that can float around on the wall. Okay. So what do you think? Maybe since all the wires have to be there before the backsplash goes up, you're talking what? An hour and a half, 2 hours? We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 electrical outlets and seven electrical outlets and one data telephone outlet that have to be finished up. What kind of material is your backsplash? Tile. Oh, I don't know. I have no idea how much time it'll take. Whatever it takes, it takes. I'm not going to rush him. If it takes him more than that Wednesday has come back on Thursday, he'll come back on Thursday. That's right. In the trench, and to PPN. Coming up to Greenmore and to ZEP. It was interesting, though, because everything got emptied, and when we did the reface, we also had him add rollout drawers. My wife wanted a few more. So with that, we had to reconfigure where we kept certain things. It was interesting figuring out that jigsaw puzzle. But since everything got empty, we saw, God, we got this. This expired in 2000. Out it goes. Two Nissan Altimas in front of me with all sorts of antennas on the rear decks of them. Strange looking antennas. Not just normal, like base loaded coils, this and that. This. One antenna that looks like a J-pole. It's got two elements. Two vertical elements. Okay. Without seeing them, I can't comment at all. Both of the Altimas have these antennas? Some heavy dark tinted windows, but regular license plates. Very strange. I'm wondering if these are some obscure covert vehicles. Not so covert with all those antennas. One's a black one and one's a white one. Very strange. Maybe it's spy versus spy. And the license plates are sequential. One is 391 and the other one is 3892. 3891 and 3892 are the license plate numbers. Well, whether the government or not, They're both owned by the same person or company. You don't get sequential license plate numbers by accident. Yeah, and they're both set up exactly the same, so very strange. FDZ 3891 and 3892.
Were you able to get a
picture? Why would I want a picture?
So we can see it. KC2WBH.
They're Nissan Altimas. What's so special about that? It's Nissan Altima. One's black, one's white. He probably wants to see the antennas. Maybe he can figure out what it is. Told you. They're through-hole mount antennas. They're not mag mounts or anything like that. They're through-hole antennas. Three of them were base-loaded cordless. Looked like they could have been, one was VHF, UH bus, something else in between. And then this one other antenna that had two elements coming up out of the loaded base.
I wonder if it could be like, bracelet monitoring stuff.
No idea. No idea if it would have been for bracelet monitoring. It wasn't RDFE. Was all on the back deck. All everything was across the back deck of the trunk.
Okay.
Reason to have two elements on a vertical base-loaded antenna like that would be if you were working some kind of a short dual-banded, you know, transmitter where you needed this simultaneous dual banding and you couldn't do it with co-phasing or other things, you know, or other things. So that's probably two bands that are unrelated to each other, which is why you had to do the two elements. I have no idea. The only reason I could think of is for a dual element is it becomes a directional antenna.
The elements were less than a half an inch apart. They were coming up out of the same loading coil base.
And I can't figure it out as far as directionality. It's definitely not something like LoJack, because that's a four antenna array, usually up on the roof.
That's an RDF. No idea over here either.
That's why I mentioned it, because it was something strange that I hadn't seen either. Ah, this part of the Grand Central, I think they have the final skin on.
Yeah, it was kind of smooth. I wasn't paying attention to the curb to see where it was.
Well, I'm coming up to Jewel Avenue, and there is no lip from the old to the new, and the manhole covers are at the right height. So this is the final skin.
Okay. Now that I think about it, yeah, there was no raised manhole covers, so I guess it is.
All I have to do is the final reflective lines now.
The dots. What's up, Richie? That's PPM. Not too much, Richie. Just waking up from a long evening over at my place. Not as long as yours, but, you know, still a bunch of people.
Yeah, I'm still trying to detox, too.
Probably by your third cup of coffee, you'll be all right.
Something like that.
Ha, ha, ha.
drop by the expressway, they still have to do the final skim coat. Something like that, I don't know. I'm already through, almost completely through to Kaga. Yeah, well, I'm in no rush. I got plenty of time. And traffic is moving well, so I didn't have to get up extremely early. Just early. I actually got out of the house early this morning. I don't know how or why, but I got out of the house a couple of minutes early.
Probably because you were afraid of hitting that snooze button, and then it would have been all over.
No. The alarm went off. I got up just like normal. Just, I guess, whatever activities I did this morning just didn't last as long as they usually do.
Are we very interesting?
But I'll be right back.
Kiss it to WBH.
Bitch, is it just supposed to be sticky today? Are we supposed to get more rain? Over the posted speed limit. I still got close to 30 miles per gallon on this thing. We doubled I mean, when you said something about over the posted speed limit of 30 miles per gallon. I said, mountain driving, you know, driving over the posted speed limit, and still got almost 30 miles per gallon here in the Toxic Avenger.
Not bad, not bad at all. Wonder how much mileage I'm going to get at the end of the month when I go to Maine. It's going to be a nice little drive. I'll be breaking it up on the way up because I'll be bypassing and visiting people in Massachusetts that we know. But on the way back, it's going to be a straight run, except for bathroom and meal breaks.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of driving I did, I could have gone to Florida.
Okay, but why would you want to go to Florida this time of year?
They're saying the amount of distance that I traveled.
True. I think Maine's about 6-7 hours to get to where I'm going to. From here, if it's a straight run, something like that.
6 hours. 6 hours was my minimum run each time.
Now, on the way up, I'll be stopping over in Longmeadow, Massachusetts. So that'll be 4 or 5 hours there. And then the next day, another, I think it's 3 hours from there up to Maine. But on the way back, it's a shorter route. So it's something like 6-7 hours, you know, without stopping.
And just for, like you said, coffee, meals, and bath breaks. And to BPN on the Kosciuszko.
And to ZEP on the Gaga. Yeah. Well, I've been told that I should enjoy using my camera up there, that the scenery is gorgeous.
Should be. Should be nice up there.
Going up to Algonquin, which, the only problem I got is that the food up there that they're really known for is all the shellfish. And I can't go near any of it because I could be allergic to it. And I really don't feel like having that kind of problem.
Oh, that's rather shellfish of you.
Yeah, so I'll have a nice piece of halibut or something like that or salmon while my wife is enjoying her lobster.
Well, there you have it. There you have it. But, what can I say? So,
Now, my daughter's up in camp. We dropped her off at camp at 9:30 yesterday morning. Snuck in through one of the service gates. Got her all situated. And then we got out of Dodge. Got back home, like I said. Dropped her off at 9:30. We were home by just a little bit before 1. She gonna let the blue hair grow out before she goes on college interviews? No. No, that's not who she is. I have no idea how the college level people take to things like that. I know at my level it would be frowned upon. The culinary programs, there's a lot of people like that. Oh, she's going for culinary arts? Ah. I thought maybe she was doing other artwork because I've seen some of the stuff you posted that she's drawn. And she's got some art talent. I take it all these schools have a culinary program then. Yes, that's why we were traveling to the schools we traveled to. I didn't pay exact attention as to which schools you were going to, but any of them state schools, which would be nice on the wallet. Two of them are SUNY schools. One of them was private. And, of course, since you're talking about crunchy numbers, she liked the private one. Absolutely, positively, without a doubt. Okay. Other than the atmosphere and price tag, does it seem to be a difference? Class size at the private school is a little bit smaller, a little more one-on-one with the professors and, you know, student-professor ratio. And the other schools' class sizes are a little bit bigger. Okay. Yeah, that might be worth it. I have absolutely no idea how much one-on-one you need with the professor in those type courses. You need a lot. You need a lot because this is 90% of your classes are labs, and your labs are all in the kitchen. Well, if she gets lucky, a lot of the courses that she does, she will get to eat her lunch as her lab course. Way beyond that, Gary. It's way beyond that. Most of these schools, the culinary arts portion of the school is feeding a major portion of the rest of the school. Okay. I'm going into the tunnel, so we'll pick this up later in the week. Try to stay awake so you don't put your fingers in the splicing machine where they don't belong. Today would fit, but thank you for your concern. Okay. I'm sitting here in my parking spot. I could go upstairs into the shanty and sit down in one of the comfy chairs and take a nap. If you think it's safe, that they'll be able to wake you up. If not, stay where you are and do ZEP clear at the Midtown Tunnel. Be more afraid that they take a sharpie and draw on me. All right, take care. And do ZEP and 2PPN. I'm going to go to the shanty.
W13. So it's just a splurge, right? I couldn't get efficiency. Then I wake up and I doze off, she's speeding ahead and ahead. And then I wake up and she's still sleeping. So I don't know. She said I was annoying. But I just I like to know why I'm being ahead. So anyway, it was 4:45 and I had to get up anyway to take care of the dog. And I got my SWAT 350 working, I got the power supply fixed, and got the radio all tuned up and nice, and we have some contact, and things pushing up the power. Wow. It's a blast from the past. Well, you know, if I kept thinking in the middle of the night, or, you know, I kept seeing somebody acting like they were sleeping, you know, rather than just doing something. Shut up, and, you know, I'm snoring, but I'm not. Wait. She's dreaming that I'm snoring. That's bad.
Tell me, as long as I'm not familiar with it, I'm just going to get the power amp and what's it, is it a squat or a corner?
Obviously, doesn't have the work band. Well, I noticed it was, when I switched bands, it was on the appropriate sideband. And I said, how do they do that? There's no sideband switch on it. You can't go from upper and lower sideband. And it's selectable by jumper configuration to the most popular, you know, sideband used on each band. So it's all set up to the lower sideband and below anything below 15 meters. So and it doesn't have AM. The bigger one have AM. So all the other models, the Collins might have AM. Maybe you could, I don't know. But this particular date and time, you know, 1965, it's one of the, they say Swan is where put the majority of hams on sideband at that particular time in history.
Over to you, Dave, and when I can.
a wide variety of radios available for purchase now than there was in the 60s. And maybe you guys can answer for that. Over to you.
Yes, one of the reasons may be that the ham gear does last. You know, it doesn't get a ton of use on the average. And, you know, you still got Kenwood 520s that are putting out, no problem, the 140s. The ICOM, I forget the model, I have that ICOM that I sold for George, but he's still using that. It has a lot of gear from the 70s and 80s still nicely, plus all the new stuff. So I guess maybe that's one of the reasons you got such a variety. And I got to look at one of those Bofung HDs on Friday. I was up at Marcus, and Danny, the technician there, was putting my antenna in. Had one sitting in his bag. Nice little package. I have to admit, it looks good. If it seems to work fine, and if it lasts, then I guess they got a good product there, even if it is Chinese.
Yeah, something about those old tube radios, there's really not a lot so wrong with them, except a liquid capacitor. And most of the power supplies that were separate from the main unit. They don't have a lot of the bells and whistles that the radios have today, and they don't have the digital frequency, but certainly have a lot more power to them, and they are really, like, you can depend on it. It's a really good sound. I'm here at the donut shop right now. As far as that other question, I'd say, yeah, you know what, you could probably count them on 2 hands, all the kinds of different varieties there were in the 60s and 70s. I would just say there's Drake, there's Collins, there's Eastkit. Some companies, they prefer to stay with the receivers, you know, like Telecraft. I don't know if Telecraft made a ham radio, but they certainly made receivers. And back then, it was very common to have a separate receiver and a separate transmitter. You were, like, really something special buying the latest and greatest transceiver. And then they found that they'd rather have the so they could run splits, which is what everybody thought it did. So, anyway, I'm at my donut shop, so I'll be, let me get out and hop back in and when I can. Over to you, Steve.
Yeah, I noticed that, like, Mansfield, Telecrafter, and
happy. Anyway,